Your recordings have started. You may now proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the fifth GNSO EPDP team meeting taking place on Thursday, the 16th of August, 2018 at 1300 UTC. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the telephone audio, could you please let yourselves be known now? Hearing no one, Alicia lifted apologies from Emily Taylor of the RRSG, Christina Rosette of the RYSG, Ben Butler, SSAC, Georgios Talentis, GAC, and James Liddell of RRSG. They have formerly named Lindsay Hamilton-Reed, Arnaud Widdersham, Greg Aaron, and Maureen Kaplan, as well as Theo Geertz, as their alternates for this call and any remaining days of absence. During this period, the members will have read-only rights and no access to conference calls. Their alternates will have posting rights and access to conference calls until the member return date. As a reminder, the alternate assignment must be formalized by the way of the Google assignment form. The link is available in the agenda pod. Statements of interest must be kept up to date. If anyone has any updates, please share or raise your hand at this time. Seeing or hearing none, if you do need assistance updating your statement of interest, please contact us via email at the GNSO Secretariat. All documentation and information can be found on the EPDP Wiki space. There is an audio cast and view-only Adobe Connect for non-members to follow the call, so please remember to state your name before speaking. Recordings will be circulated on the mailing list and posted on the public Wiki space shortly after the end of the call. With this, I'll turn it back over to our chair, Kurt Pritz. Please begin.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, and welcome to the call again. I want to let you know that these calls are at 6 a.m. for me, which ordinarily wouldn't be a problem at all, but it seems like every meeting something interferes with my night's sleep. And yesterday, my sons, who are home city working their summer jobs, came home from work to let me know they were having a party last night. So parties, even at that age, turn into sleepovers because nobody wants to drive home. And so there you have it. So here's today's agenda, and we're going to be reviewing appendices D, E, and G, which have to do with services that are provided to registrants. I just want to note at the top of the call three things. One is, as you know, we received an email from Muren Marbury of ICANN, and he asked us two questions, but I really took it as sort of a reach out to establish communications between us and ICANN staff to make sure our efforts are coordinated and they understand what our scope is and what we'll be doing, because I think there's, even with the charter, there remains some confusion about that. So, like I said in my email, it makes perfect sense to let you provide some advice in how best to answer that. I do want to get the email out, maybe at the end of today on the West Coast at the end of the Earth. So if you, it's not terribly important. I just want to, sound smart. So if you have any comments or advice, please let me know in any way you see fit. Second of all, I've furnished a draft of the first section of a triage report that we might furnish to the GNSO. So remember, the triage report is a requirement made by the charter that we have to do. And so if we have some time left at the end of the meeting, and I hope we might, but I just jinxed myself there, I'd like to go through that with you. So with that, I'll just pause for a second and see if there's any comments or questions to the agenda and take us to the call. Thank you. So I don't know if I want to stall the meeting for this now, but I'll take a chance. So there's Thomas, and then there's Kavuska. Thomas, could you speak up on your question about the overall GDPR implementation plan? When you say those words, what vision is in your mind? What are you picturing?
Sorry, I had to get off mute. Hello, everyone. It's Thomas. I was thinking that, you know, I can, as other organizations or companies do, might have an overall plan, implementation plan with milestones when it comes to GDPR implementation. Because I understand that the temporary specification has an impact on ICANN, the organization, as well as different departments inside ICANN when it comes to compliance action, to name only one example. And so if ICANN had already reviewed its own work in certain areas or plans to do so, I think it would be helpful for our group to understand what ICANN's thinking is in the areas particularly relating to this work, so that we can learn from that and make sure that what we're suggesting fits in seamlessly.
Okay, I understand now. Now, it's not ICANN's plan for the rest of the ICANN community. It's ICANN's plan for themselves. So thanks for that, and I'll find a constructive way to include that in the letter. Kavuz, did you have a comment?
Yes. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everybody. Just one very small point. You mentioned in part of the paper of today that the part four is due on Sunday, 19. I wish to inform you that, unfortunately, due to the circumstances, the GAC will meet on 20th to finalize part four. Therefore, our will be a little bit late if it doesn't disturb you. Thank you.
Thanks, Kavuz. Well, the GAC has a pretty good on-time record, and we've incorporated some late inputs. So if you have that in on Monday, we'll be able to formulate most of the presentation and then add your input and adjust the slides. So thanks for letting us know. Mark?
Hey, Kurt. It's Mark Anderson for the transcript. Just on Jorn's letter, I just had a comment or a reaction to that, I guess. His first item, he mentions, you know, how ICANN can share guidance we receive from DPAs and European Data Protection Board with the EPP Working Group. And later he goes on to say, you know, that we post all information we receive through our blogs and engage with stakeholders. I'm wondering what Aaron has in mind, if he has, you know, sort of more information he wants to share with us beyond what he's already posting on the blogs. I'm not entirely sure what he has in mind there, but, you know, of course, you know, any opportunity to open dialogue and have conversations is a good thing, and we should take advantage of that. On the second one, I am kind of curious how, you know, there's the item how the EPP working group can provide input to ICANN.org. And, you know, I think the GNSO Council in drafting the charter sort of envisioned having ICANN.org members, you know, directly participating in the working group discussions. And, you know, we have participation from org in here. You know, I think that they sort of anticipated that, and we're looking for that as a path to facilitate communication. So I guess I'm wondering if you know, we should be looking at, you know, more than just that, and, you know, maybe if our ICANN.org liaisons had any thought on, you know, what more we could be doing there to facilitate communication. But overall, you know, like I said, I think, you know, any opportunity to facilitate and communicate between the groups is a good thing, and we should take advantage of that. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. I'll let Dan Halloran and Trang Nguyen think about your second question. You know, for me, when the letter said, you know, we post all information we receive, it was sort of a comment that we already post everything we receive, so I'm not sure what else we could do, but if you could let us know, that'd be good. So that's how I saw that. And then, you know, the second question, I had a lot of trouble with that myself and, you know, sort of blurted out the best answer I could. I think, you know, frankly, I think, you know, ICANN is the organization is going ahead and creating an access model. So I think, you know, we want to sit with them and understand what they're doing and what we think our remit is. And so anything that's provided by ICANN to the community doesn't land with a thud, and everything we do takes advantage of the work that they've already done. So those are my thoughts about that. I don't know if Dan or Trang have anything to add to that. And Caboose, is that a hand that's
it's older? It's a new hand. It's a new hand. If you allow me, kindly, just a small clarification. Do you expect a report or view from each of the stakeholder group and constituency and advisory group on 22nd of August, in addition to what the sub-team, that means GAC team and other teams, provide you? Do you expect something? The first document mentioned that, but it is not quite clear whether by 22nd of August you expect to receive from all of these nine all of these nine stakeholder group, constituencies, and advisory, a overall report or overall views on the temporary specification. Do you expect that? Please confirm. Thank you.
I think we do not. I think we just expect you to complete the fourth part of the survey, and then, you know, we'll take those and the discussion and create, you know, we're going to continue to create this triage report, or build this triage report. So I think that's our role to put together for you. What I want to do, as if you don't have enough to do, is, you know, start to iterate the triage report, so that pretty close to when we're done with discussing the last survey, we'll be able to deliver that, because we want to get on to the next thing. But I want to check with Marika Berry. Caitlin, is there any other deliverable we expect from these guys? Gee, I think no. Farzi?
Thank you, Kurt. Farzi Nabagi speaking. I just wanted to make a very short comment about your letter about the access model. I never understood what ICANN's plan is, ICANN organ is, for providing this access model, why it's asking for comments. Do they want to come up with an access model and receiving comments from us? And are they going to implement it? Is there a timeline for implementation? Does that mean that the EPDP group will have less to do with access? And so these are, I think you kind of mentioned that, but these are my questions and my concerns. I believe that if access model has to be discussed, it has to be discussed at the appropriate time when at EPVP. I don't know why I can't work. It's probably a contractual compliance issue, but I don't know why they are so proactive on this, or if this is only guidance for EPVP, then that's fine. But I don't know why I don't know the nature of this document that I come and got with, and I think we need some clarity on that.
I exactly right, and those are all good questions that, and I can't answer, and of course I can't answer any of them. So I think that for the purposes of answering this letter, we're going to start this dialogue and then work into where we get answers to those. Okay, then. So I wanted to mention one more thing, but it slipped my mind. Anyway, I've taken notes of your questions, and we'll form some additional questions around the reply to the letter to the rest of ICANN to get some answers on that. So let's go into the results of the survey forms you filled out and pretty much got here on time. So that's just excellent for us. And we're talking about the appendices where registrars and registries support registrants and the different things they do or actions that are caused by the fact that they're a registrant. So you can see there's pretty good agreement on some of the sections, but some fairly serious issues that were raised too. So I'm really interested to get into them. So you've got your dog-eared copy of the temporary specification in your left hand and your pad on your right-hand side, and the spreadsheet that Barry and Caitlin keep up for us on your screen, as well as this. So here we go. And the first is about how to carry on with uniform rapid suspension when the information that those filing a URS action is no, the information they need is no longer available to them because the public who is no longer available to them. So there were some wording questions and broader questions and then meta questions. So we listed them in order of kind of where they occur in the spec. So in 1.1.1. I'm scanning through this, but upon a URS provider notifying the registry operator of the existing complaint or participate in another mechanism to provide the full registration data. So there's some question about what other than what's listed here, what's another mechanism do registrars or registries in their discussions with ICANN on the formation of this have an idea what that is, and or should it be eliminated from here? Then in section 1.2, I'd ask a registrar to explain maybe what incompatibilities there might be with existing URS procedures or how that's caused. After I said I'd have the spreadsheet in front of me, I don't have it up in front of me, but whoever made that comment, it'd be good to hear from them. Number three, we still lack a URS provider from Asia, so maybe we'd hear from ICANN on steps for that, although I'm not sure it affects our work here. I think we just have to assume that there will be one in the near future. The specification uses the word contract details in section two, and should that be blown out a little bit and defined better? And then allowing the complainant to file an amended URS once they receive the registration data and kind of know who the receiving party is, should that be amended? And then you know, there's a question about the Appendix D, you know, and this topic being more appropriately addressed by the RPM group that's also considering URS and UDRP. And I have some thoughts about that, but I'll hear yours first. And then again, should we consider this after some deliberations on the access model? So for me, that's a little bit problematic. It seems like we want to finish our work on this report first, but, you know, I want to hear the reasons for that, too, to fully understand them before I propose maybe how to satisfy number 7 and continue on for the work. And then there's a concern that, you know, this might be used as a tool to obtain registration data by filing DOE complaints. So I want to hear about that. So sorry for that tedious reading. Alan from the registries, do you want to speak first? Alan, we can't hear you. Alan? Hello, buddy.
Alan, this is Terry, I noticed that you do have your phone connected.
Yeah, in the chat, he said to skip him and go back to him.
Okay. Theo? Maybe stepping in for Alan?
No, well, I'm not stepping in for Alan, but since you're giving me the mic, a couple of quick comments here. As a registrar, we are pretty much okay with this. I mean, it's working already. We have experience, of course, with the CCTLDs, which have which produce no personal information in the WHOIS. We have, of course, disputes about domain names. So this is pretty much what's in the TAM spec. It's already working, has been working for quite a while for most registrars. So we don't see much of an issue here. I wanted to clarify one little thing here on number 3 regarding processing agreements. That basically goes for all other UDRP providers or URS providers that are sort of outside of Europe. And I don't think that is something for the EPDP. I think we can pick that up within ICANN ourselves. Thank you.
Thanks, Theo. Margie?
Hi, this is Margie with the BC. I just wanted to share our perspective that it would be a big problem for us if the URS wasn't part of this, and the changes that were suggested there enable us to do the work that we can do so that we can protect our brands and our trademarks under the remedies that ICANN's developed over the years. So I just want to emphasize that that's a very important thing for us, that it be part of this EPDP and not be delayed by the time that it takes to do the other PDPs.
Thanks, Margie. Alan's back.
Hopefully you can hear me now.
Yeah.
Yes,
I can.
Hello. Oh, you can hear me. Okay. Okay. I'm assuming that it'll go on then. Okay. Thank you, Joel. Okay. So number 2 there. So does the language in section 1.2 create possible incompatibilities with existing URS procedures? Whereas this is kind of more an aside issue, and I suppose following on from what Margie was saying there, that I think that the existence of the Appendix D is basically the TEMSPEC caused issue with making the URF go forward, and therefore this was in order to, you know, maybe in the transition period smooth things ahead. So we do probably have to look at the Appendix D, because it does provide kind of, the language is not bad, but it does potentially cause some issues with the URS procedure itself that will, and it's a question of whether or not, you know, the community would rather fix it from an EPDP point of view, or would it be more, would it be better to fix it from the URS procedures point of view? So an example of that is number two, it talks about the creation of a DOE claim, so a John Doe or Jane Doe claim. There is a problem in the procedure where it says that only the complainant is the person who can update the URS complaint once it is started. Therefore, the provider technically shouldn't change the complaint if it was a DOE claim, if you know what I mean. They're small technical issues that would need to be reviewed and revised, not necessarily things for the EPDP, but we must keep in mind that we will have an effect on those going forward. But generally speaking, the registry stakeholder group didn't have major heartburn when it came to the wording that is currently in Appendix D. And also just to say that goes for, as we go forward with the EDRP, we say the same thing about that as well. It's again, some tweaks will be needed to that. And that should be done in like the RPM, not the EPDP, I would suggest.
And so I kind of, thanks, Alan. I kind of think that, you know, the RPM group is, again, I'm going to try to draw this distinction, but I never get any positive feedback for it, so I'm probably wrong. But they are a policy group, so they're looking at the elements in the URS and UDRP claim and the timing of that, and what is fair for the. For the parties fashioning policy around a balancing of the benefits and the costs. And for us here, I think we're trying to make the procedure work. So I see our role as that. So to the extent that, I think we need enough detail here so the procedure works. So it's a roadmap for registries and registrars. Of course, registrars now have a role in this to make sure that the direction in here is clear enough so that it's straightforward how to do their jobs. Alan?
Thank you very much. I appreciate that the RPM PDP is in a better position to understand the subtleties of changes and make sure that what we're doing is an improvement and not something that causes additional problems. And they probably have far more people on it who are looking at this in depth. But I agree with what you just said, that our job here is to make it work. So if, for instance, the need to change a DOE complaint to put the real name in, and the provider we want, and we think it's reasonable that the provider does that, then I think we need to make those changes now. The problem with tossing it over to another group is the timing. They may not be in a position to make a report that is acted on in enough time to make sure that these little tweaks are done to make sure to ensure that the process is actually usable. Moreover, they may finish first, and they won't have the full details of what we're doing to contemplate what tweaks to make. So I think we need to use our best efforts to make the changes we need, with the understanding that should the RPM PDP still be around, that we can interact with them and or they can take action to reverse what we're doing afterwards if indeed we made a really dumb mistake. But if there's a change needed to make these processes actually work, and we already have a few months experience with them, and by the time we deliver our draft report there'll be a few more months experience, I think we need to make those changes now and not wait for later. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. The only correction I'll make is if we hit our milestones when we make our draft report, they'll have a few more weeks, not a few more months. The NCSG is lined up. Milton?
Yeah. Yes, this is Milton. Hello, everybody. I'm kind of disagreeing with what you said, Kurt, about there being this kind of coupling of the temp spec with the issues related to URS. I haven't heard any specific evidence as to how there is a problem or conflict caused by the temp spec in terms of the execution of the URS. And if I heard him correctly, I heard both of the registry operators saying that there is no problem and that these issues should be resolved in the RPM working group. I'm not quite understanding. I know that certain stakeholders really want to talk about access, and they want to turn this temp spec proceeding into an access proceeding, but if that's the agenda, we're going to have to resist it, because I don't think there is an access issue here that is not already handled by existing procedures. That's all.
Let's just take the first part of your comment. And so I don't disagree with what you said. I think if the registrars and registries say the detail in this Appendix D is good enough to go ahead with as written, then I think that's fine and we'll leave it alone. And if they indicate that, there might be incompatibilities with something else, or there's another detail that needs to be worked out in order for this specification to match what they actually do, then we need to fix that. The second part of your comment we should kind of stay away from, because I don't think that's the agenda of people that are raising that. They just, I'll just take Margie's comment. She wants URS that works, and the business constituency wants URS that works, and that makes sense to me. So that's fine. And thanks, Fargy, for agreeing with what Milton said. Amar?
Thanks, Kurt. This is Amar. I think my instinct would be to sort of approach this in terms of what we know about the URS now. I certainly think it would be desirable to sort of be in the loop on any changes or proposed changes by the RPM's PDP on what the URS might look like in the future, if it does at all change during the course of its review, which, if I'm not mistaken, is taking place now. But as far as our task is concerned, there are a number of reasons why different actors would require access to registered name holder contact details for the purpose of a process like the URS. So, for example, you have trademark owners who would require those. We have the option of a DOE complaint here, but there are also other features in the URS process. For example, if a trademark holder would like to file multiple complaints against multiple domain name registrations against a single registrant. So the only way they could do that is if they have the registrant name and the, his or her contact details. So at this point, we would, and then there's, of course, the actual U.S. provider would need the contact details in order to contact the registrant and inform him or her of the URS complaint being put against them. But our task here is to determine, or a task coming up when we start discussing access will be to determine what legitimate interests exist and whether they warrant access to contact details. At some point, if we determine that, one of these or both of them or none of them present as an interest that is backed up by a purpose within ICANN's scope. And again, before anyone jumps at me, I'm not saying that it isn't. I'm just saying this is something we need to discuss, and to what extent the access goes, which actors get access to what data. But these are things we do need to keep in mind, I think, moving forward with access to processes like the URS or the UDRP. And that's just one reason I think it might be helpful to be able to just have a, keep a close eye on what's happening with the RPM's review. Thanks.
Yeah, so Amr, that was well said, and this is a really an unfair question, but given what you said, do you have an idea for how this Appendix V might change to bring it into line with what your statement was, or are you saying we have to answer some other questions first?
Yeah, I think we should work with what we have at the time being. So right now we do have a URS process. We should work based on that. But I do think we should just keep an eye on what is happening with the URS review and sort of try to predict what changes might take place, see if we could accommodate them in any way. But also, of course, keeping in mind, that we do need to be compliant with GDPR. And I think this really actually needs to be a two-way communication between our team and the RPM's review. Because again, we're focusing on a very specific and narrow scope of work here, which is compliance with GDPR. They're looking at something that they're going to be discussing a lot of things that we won't be discussing. And what they come up with will certainly be helpful to us. What we come up with will ultimately be necessary, I think, to implement. In general, I think we should work with what we have right now. And I'm starting to see how it would be helpful to sort of, get through the triage exercise and get to the discussion on access, because that's where all this really needs to take place. But again, this is something that we've been saying over every single call we've had. There are steps that we need to take before we start discussing the nuances of access to data and what the what legitimate interests should have should be basis for access to this data. So when we do get to that part of the discussion, and the NCSG in its response did say that this should be deferred till that time. This is something we need to consider very thoroughly, and I believe that coordination is necessary. But again, for now, let's work with what we have. Thanks.
Thanks, Amr. That was a good answer. Margie?
This is Margie from the DC. I think that Alan's suggestion was probably one that makes a lot of sense to essentially make whatever tweaks we need to the language that's in the appendix just to make sure it works, but know that the other CDP, the rights protection mechanism, can fix it if there's an issue later. Because if you think about it, if we don't deal with it at all, then essentially when the temporary spec is replaced by the policy that comes out of this group, there would be no changes to the URS. And that's a problem for us because we don't have the access to the data anymore to be able even to exercise the remedies that are listed under the URS. And so that's why that language is there. It's really to enable that, the policy to work so that brand holders can submit URS complaints, even if they don't have the full data set, and the URS providers can process those requests, and the policy works. So that's I think the approach that Alan suggested probably makes a lot of sense.
Thanks, Margie, very much. Thea?
Thanks, good. I guess I'm not understanding the discussion completely here. From my point of view, I think the URS and the UDRP are working now. I mean, trademark holders can file their complaints, and the process is being kicked off, and it's working. So I wouldn't spend too much time on this, on something that is working. Every contracted party has to balance the rights of the data subject compared to the interests of the trademark holders. So I think that balancing act is there and is pretty much a safeguard for abuse on a couple of levels. And in regards of the RPM, I would expect that whatever that group produces is in line with data protection laws. And maybe they even have looked on what a UDRP provider actually requires in the sense of data from a data subject slash registrant. Thanks.
Yeah. Stephanie?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Good, sorry about that. Stephanie Perrin, for the record, I just wanted to recall Thomas Rickard's excellent question about whether ICANN has a overall plan for compliance with GDPR, because this discussion is a pretty good illustration of what we were worried about when the NCSG basically tried to limit the scope of this EPDP to a very narrow one. I would recommend, and here's my concrete suggestion before you get the preamble, I would recommend that we start a parking lot for issues that need to be resolved as a result of GDPR implementation, but are not necessarily part of this particular spec. Because if we drag everything in, unfortunately, we will have to examine all of the details surrounding all of the policies. And unfortunately, many ICANN policies will have to be rejigged as a result of GDPR compliance. I do apologize for my phone ringing. So let's start a parking lot, and if we have time, we can fix all these things. And if not, we leave them to the next PDP. Thanks.
Thank you, Stephanie. That was an excellent suggestion, I think. So here's where I my takeaway is on this, that this Appendix D is essentially okay as is. When we have our substantive discussion, we'll take recommendations for any changes. There's a question about the data that's currently being shared as part of this process, how much of the data, and we'll take that up during the access discussion. So leave this somewhat as is, and then take that other later. All right, Barzi.
Yes, sorry, Kurt. I just wanted to say that I totally agree with you, and yeah, I see that in chat some say that it's not within the remits of this group to talk about URS, UDRP provider access to personal information of domain name registrants, and want to say that it is, and we should talk about it when we talk about access at EPDP. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thanks for the second time in my life I got plus ones. So let's leave this and go on to the next topic. I'll just pause 30 seconds to see if there's another hand. 30 seconds is up. The comments in the this is where we might start to zoom. The comments for UDRP are similar. UDRP is a registrar operated model, so might be a little bit simpler than some of the complexities introduced into URS. I don't see the need for reading down a lot of the, these are similar to what's been said before. So, Mark, please join us.
Thank you. Mark Lozarek, for the record. I just wanted to make a remark before we proceed. There has been a lot of talk about whether access is part of this EPDP or whether it belongs in the parking lot or something like that. And I wanted to just, on the record, as Caboose says, that reasonable access is definitely part of this process. It's not a parking lot issue. It is something that we have to address and something that we have to solve in this process, and it's not productive for us to keep saying that maybe it is or maybe it isn't or maybe it's something we'll get to maybe. So please let's just accept the fact that reasonable access is part of this process, and we have to address it as we go on.
Yep, and thank you, Mark. You used the term reasonable access that some of us, including me, don't know exactly how to define. the idea that we'll, you know, read Appendix D from a process standpoint for the purposes of reviewing the temp spec now and then looking at which data is used, which data is revealed, and in what way, as part of the access discussion, does that kind of match what you does that meet the requirement you gave us?
I'm sorry, I got a little lost in that. Could you?
Yeah. Well, I'm not surprised. So our plan, I think, is to take one more look at Appendix D during the substantive discussion, but we think it's pretty close to okay as written, and then take up the matter of which data is revealed and see if that should be changed from the current practice when we have our access discussion after that.
Yeah, I thought Appendix D was pretty good as written, but my comment was really more of a general comment. I mean, if we're going to state at every turn that maybe we don't need to get to reasonable access, then I will have to reply at every turn. We actually have to. So be redundant and tiresome, and I'm hoping I won't have to do that.
Okay, thank you. Alex?
Thanks, Gert. It's Alex. I just wanted to make a statement that I've made in the past and made in the chat several times this morning, is that it sounds like everyone agrees that the temp spec requires reasonable access, but it's up to us as the EPDP to define what the policy should be for reasonable access. I think that's what our job is here. Clearly, I understand there's larger issues of access, and we have getting questions to answer. That's not in dispute, but the term reasonable access and defining what that means and coming to an agreement is something that we as a team need to do. Thanks.
Thank you, Alex. Milton?
Yes. So let's just clarify this. It's all in writing about reasonable access. Registrars are already required to provide reasonable access under the temp spec. Now, the leap that Alex and Mark were make is that, oh, it's part of our mandate that we have to have a policy to define what reasonable access means. That is actually not necessarily the case. If we agreed that this is going, reasonable access is going to be defined on a registrar by registrar basis, based on what jurisdiction they are and what policies they are, that would be the status quo under the temp spec. Now, I know that a lot of people don't want that, to have a uniform access policy, but the question of whether we get or need a uniform access policy is not demanded by the EPDP's charter. Instead, the charter says you have to answer, or that is, we have to answer a bunch of gating questions before we decide whether and what a uniform access policy would be. So, yeah, I think this issue seems to be a sticking point, and it doesn't need to be. If you want to talk, you know, what we do first is we decide what parts of the temp spec we're going to keep and what is now a consensus policy. And then we answer the gating questions, and then we get into the issue of do we need a uniform access policy or how do we define reasonable access. I think the sequence is very clear, and we can avoid going over this again and again if people simply recognize the sequence. And the question of defining reasonable access is indeed an open question, not one that we must do.
Thanks, Milton. Kavus, you're next.
Yes, two question issues. First, please kindly read all yes answers of GAC as a qualified yes, because there are always comments, clarifications, and suggestions for some improvement or change of language, is number one. Number two, I don't share the views that reasonable access is clear for everybody. For some people, it may be clear. For some others, it is not. I don't know who is going to define that, what access is reasonable and what access is not reasonable. And I don't think that we should not discuss the uniform or unified access. I don't agree that it is not part of the group. I agree that we should discuss that at a later stage and so on and so forth. But I don't want to totally dissociate this issue. And that has also been discussed in GAC, and we are going to provide a comment on this unified access, unified, accurate, reliable access. Thank you.
Thanks, Milton. You know, let's go on to the end of the comments. But I think a lot of us there's an area of intersection in this Venn diagram that we're on this topic. Alan,
thank you very much. Look, we all have different opinions on what reasonable is. It's going to, and it may well also vary by jurisdiction. I think where our, and ultimately I hope we will decide those, and we can decide whether an intellectual property lawyer will get access to information under what conditions, and, you know, that all has to be done somewhere, hopefully, in my mind, in this group, but that remains to be seen. The difference in when we're talking about things like the URS or UDRP is if implementation of the GDPR temporary spec causes ICANN policies to break, then I believe we have absolutely no choice but to integrate the changes in those policies or somewhere along the way to make sure that the other policies don't break. So there's some reasonable that may be discretionary, and we're all going to have different opinions on it. But if it breaks another ICANN policy, as some of these things have done or will do without the changes, then those we need to address. And that goes back to what I said before, of if there are additional things that temporary spec left out, which experience has now shown need to be changed, those are no longer judgment call reasonable, but changes must be made one way or another to make sure that the policy is operable. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Alan. Mark?
Well, as promised 5 minutes ago, if we're going to state that access is not an appropriate topic, then I will have to, of course, intervene and say that I think it is. So thank you to Dr. Mueller for clarifying his position. I have to say, I feel like this time I've really understood where he's coming from. So my understanding is that he's saying that there is no requirement that we will eventually end up on a particular unified access model, and I suppose that's correct. But I think perhaps we should be very careful about the words we use when we talk about this, because many of us are saying the words reasonable access, and other people are perhaps making much broader, more sweeping statements that could be interpreted as we don't have to talk about access at all. And I think those sort of disconnects are resulting in a lot of overhead in the discussion and confusion and concern.
Thanks, Mark. And if it's okay with everybody, I'll bring this part of the overhead discussion to a close. I appreciate Alan's comment that we're trying to pay attention to URS and UDRP here and make them work in some way under the new regime. And, you know, I see, I'm being oversimplistic, but I think Mark was alluding to it. I see there's intersection in what everybody says. It's, there's an order to the work in the charter, and that work includes answering gating questions that are a prerequisite to having an access discussion, which will be had at that time. So I'll close with that. And does anybody have any specific comments about UDRP and the questions here? Does the party that say that the language about participate in another mechanism, do registries and registrars understand what that means, participate in another mechanism?
Is that something that you're comfortable with in this, or is it something put there for a specific reason, or is it just sort of a catch-all that might should either be better defined or eliminated? So I'd really like to hear from registrar on that. Mark, if you're done, I'll go on to Caboose.
Yes, with respect to your question, please kindly read the Yak reply. All participants in the team, they have questions about what does it mean to participate in another mechanism and so on and so forth, what another mechanism is, that, what we do with that. So there are questions about all of them, all of the three of us mentioned the clarification in different languages, some of them going a little bit further than the others, but please kindly read the GAC clarifications sought in this item. Thank you.
Yeah. Theo? Theo, you're up.
Hi, good. I'm reading that sentence. I have no idea what it actually means, so that's my input as a registrar. If we could get some more clarification on it, I mean, I'm not sure what it means. Thanks.
Alan?
You can hear me now. Sorry. I'm going to make a suggestion. I do not know if this is correct or not, but it seems to me that it is actually, and for fear of going back into any of the other discussion, but it is deferring to if, say, something like the RPMs decided a new mechanism by which this could be fixed, it could be alluding to that. Again, it was a forward-looking statement, but I'm not certain. But that's the way I would read it in my mind.
So we could add those words you just said. In the event that some other mechanism is proven necessary or something like that. Okay. All right, I'm going to leave UDRP behind and go on to the transfer policy. I think we're up to version 17 of the transfer policy or something like that. And, the concerns here and the one we put first, because all of us that don't understand the security risks created by the revised transfer policy should understand them. So there were, I think, registries and or registrars and ESAC pointed this out in their comments. So I think we'd like to hear about this. Again, there's a question about other policy work, transfer policy 18 that's underway, whether that affects us or our work. In section 1.2, where there's a requirement in the transfer policy for the registrant to intercede twice. To provide their own data rather than having someone else provide it. I think that's the purpose for it. So is there any reports that might discourage transfers in some way? In section one, there's language to be offered, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to find it. I found it last night. But should that be removed? It's kind of... It almost looks like that was a phrase that was in an original draft that no longer fits in there. But if anybody understands why that language is in there to be offered, that'd be great. And there's a question about bulk changes or bulk transfers and how that might be done. And I don't know, is that a Batapa thing? So from something that happened about 13 years ago. And then, in section 3 refers to best practices. And if that's a term of art from, say, the AA or something like that, where registrars understand what that means, that's fine. But if that's an undefined term, then maybe it should require clarity. So, great opportunity, everybody. The queue is empty. But first, I'd like to hear about the security issues that are raised by the new transfer policy. Can someone speak to that? Benedict, I was just going to ask if you would speak to that. Great. Go ahead.
Hello. Hopefully you can hear me.
Yeah, we can.
So what happens is if you rely just on the auth info code, you're effectively just saying the security of the whole process relies on having a particular number, and those numbers and combinations of numbers and letters can be hacked or brute forced or stuffed. So you're taking you're severing the relationship between the gaming registrar and the registrant. They effectively haven't, even though the registrant probably initiated that transfer, they've got no there's no relationship with the gaming registrar, and they can't check with them in a sort of out of band way. And in fact, the policy does specifically say you shouldn't rely on this having this code as an authentication mechanism. What's different, I guess, with this problem is there might actually be an easy solution, which is that there is an extension in EPP that allows you to say, that would allow the gaming registrar to say, using EPP for the losing registrar, and say, hi, I'm the gaming registrar, I've got this code from my registrant, can I have their contact details, please? And here's the auth info code, which is provided for as an optional extension to the spec, that allows them to get that information. As long as that process, if we feel that process is GDPR compliant, then we have a way to do it technically. Although, obviously, I'm a tiny registrar, and I'd love to hear from people who are doing this every day as to whether that's feasible or not. Does that make sense?
Kurt, you're muted.
Okay, so I said some complimentary things to Benedict and for his clear explanation. So, Alan, do you want to make a comment on this, or I really want to go to a registrar to get feedback? But I'll tell you what, let's march down the list. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't mind coming in later. You asked, is there a security problem? The last time that transfer policy was discussed in a PDP, and there was extensive discussion on whether the form of authorization was still needed or not, and the decision was that it was still needed. This the temporary spec says, if you don't have it, you don't need it. So that's going directly against a conscious decision that was made in the last PDP, and I believe that is problematic. Thank you.
For the reasons that Benedict stated. Theo?
Can you hear me, Kurt?
Yes, I can.
Excellent. So what is in a temporary spec? That has been created by the tech ops group from the registrars and the registries. We were looking at the situation on the transfers, and we needed to come up with a solution. This, what is in the temp spec, is currently the solution, and it's working pretty good. And when there is a transfer, there is always an FOA from the losing registrar to the registrant, do you want to transfer? So there might be not an incoming FOA at the start of the transfer, but there's always at the end of the process an FOA to the registrant, do you want to transfer, yes or no? So there is a process there. If you take a look about security, when we talk about security, we see an issue, and it's a very old issue. The WHOIS is redacted now, and it becomes more complex to deal with unauthorized transfers to get that sorted out. It used to be a problem in the past, pre-GDPR, if you will, but the problem is a little bit amplified, and that is growing because we can't look in the other registrars who is vice versa. So in terms of audit trails, et cetera,
vice versa. Yeah. So in terms of audit trails, et cetera, there needs to
And our suggestion is to make sure basically that we do that outside of this EPDP, because it is a very complex process on an operational level. And I think if we're going to try to fix everything when it comes to transfers in a GDPR fashion, I think we're going to be running out of time. Thank you.
Well, that gives me pause for thought. So Matt, all right, everybody mute. So Matt, do you want to follow up with Theo? I note that in the registrar comment, you do make the comment that the transfer process is working, but creates new vulnerability. So I assume they're the same thing, sorts of thing Benedict described. But then I heard Theo's intervention. So
I heard Theo's intervention. So maybe you can go ahead and
bring that all together. Go ahead, Matt. Yes, but you did.
Thanks, Kurt. Can you hear me?
Yes, but you did. Yes.
Thanks. Just to pick up on what Theo said and to provide a little more color, actually, out of all the comments that we received from the stakeholder group, we probably got the most specific comments on this point. A lot of specific ideas and things to put forward, and we sort of dialed that back and kept and left the comment pretty high level, because we did feel, and Theo kind of touched on it, that while we firmly believe that the transfer policy needs a relook at, we think it's outside of the remit of this group, and we're concerned that if we go down the rabbit hole of trying to address the totality of the transfer policy of PDP group, that we'll just run out of time. So while we think it needs to be looked at, generally, what's in the temp spec is working for now, but we would absolutely support a move to relook at the entire transfer policy from start to finish. As Benedict mentioned, there's certainly some technology that could be deployed to make it a lot more both secure and user-friendly, frankly. Thanks.
Thanks, Matt. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want a clarification. I think I heard Theo say there is always a form of authorization today post a temporary spec. And in that case, if I heard that correctly, then why do we need 1.1?
Go ahead, Theo. Sorry.
Oh, no worries. Yes, Alan, that is correct. There is always a mechanism. Doesn't have to be an FOA in the sense of an email, but there's always a form of authorization from the losing registrar to the registrant. Do you want to transfer? That is in the temporary spec, as such, as defined in following the following the transfer procedure, which was part of IRTPC, I think, and there is stipulated that if there is a transfer, this and this and this is what the registrar has to do. So the losing registrar still has to follow that process of IRTPC. Thanks.
Okay. But for clarity, do we need 1.1, which says if the gaining registrar cannot get one?
I wouldn't personally go there, because that is... Then we're getting into the data protection issues, because we don't know if that is completely legal for a registrar to sort of download the information from another registrar's, WIS server to compile that FOA, and it's pretty tricky, I would guess. I mean, talking about Chapter 5, cross-data transfers, et cetera, et cetera. Is there consent? It's a minefield, I guess. So I wouldn't go there. So that's why we are advocating put this outside of the EPDP, because you're going to be rolling in work here. Thanks.
Did that answer your question, Alan?
Not really, but I'm willing to leave it for the moment and investigate offline and pursue it when we come to the substantive discussion if necessary.
Okay, thanks. So is the interpretation of this 1.1 that the losing registrar still has to furnish a form of authorization, but the gaining registrar is not required to furnish, instead of obtain, a form of authorization because they don't have the contact information? Is that the way to interpret that 1.1? Evidently not. Milton?
Well, I would have been happy if your question that responded, that got the crickets response was answered, Kurt.
I think Theo did.
Chat.
So my
comment is simply from the non-commercial registrant's point of view, this is an extremely important issue. If there's one area where we want to protect security, it's in, you know, preventing unauthorized hijackings and privacy concerns are, in that case, secondary to the security concerns, because you're not publishing the data, you're just releasing it to a registrar. However, based on what Theo has been saying, I think I agree with him that these issues are, things are working, they're workable, let's say, now. If there is a need to revise the transfer process, it should be done in a separate PDP, and therefore this is what Stephanie has called a parking lot issue, and I would support any
Hi, this is
just testing.
Go ahead, Milton.
No, we couldn't hear anything.
We did lose you for a few moments.
Oh, that's okay. So I was just saying that even though we're deeply concerned about the security of the transfers process, it seems to me, based on what the registrars are saying, that this is a parking lot issue. This is something that may need to be addressed but could be properly addressed within the framework of a transfers PDP, and we can't get into the details of it now. It's not clear that the temp spec itself is causing any particular notable problems. It could be fixed. It's more of a broader review of the transfers process. Thank you.
And, Kurt, this is Terry. It looks like your mic is muted.
Yes, because when Milton went mute, I thought it was my problem. So I hopped off this, hopped on my phone. So, I just want to acknowledge Stephanie's comment for pending this issue out and keeping it, and so I already captured it, but I didn't let her know. Cavus?
Yes, I think the issue of transfer of data is very important. I don't agree that it should be dealt with under the separate PDP. So there are many things that should be treated separately. Access should be treated separately. PDP, transfer should be treated separately. I don't understand then what remains. It's an animal that we hire. You cut the head, you cut the hand, you cut the feet, and what remains? So I don't think that is, what does it mean, separate PDP? Transfer of information should be quite clearly in this specification. And I don't understand when you say hijacking, unauthorized transfer. Hijacking in any case is not allowed. But unauthorized is important to be addressed and should be addressed within these specifications. And I don't think that we should try to dissociate that and make our life simpler. That would not be a complete specification. So it is not possible to do that. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Cavus, and I think you're right. And what we're saying, I think, is that this transfer policy is currently working, and for the purposes of the temporary specification is okay, and that if there's not transfer of data concerns, but if there's security concerns with how the transfer policy is currently implemented under GDPR, we can either look at that after we finish the examination of this temp spec, where we have a workable solution, or defer it to the other group. But as far as the transfer of data, I think you're exactly right, and we should not let those issues go. So thanks. Benedict? Benedict, I'll channel Terry here and tell you you're on mute.
Hold hand, sorry.
Oh. I just look forward to your comments.
Righty ho. Just pointing out, it was an old hand, but just to point out that Theo had done a really good explanation of the previous discussions around.
Yep. Can you guys hear me?
Am I audible now?
Yes.
I'm sorry. This I'm gonna mute you. It's not very clear. If you didn't hear the previous comment, I was just saying that Theo, really a really nice explanation by Theo of the FOA in the chat. It'd be great if staff could capture that, please.
Yep, we will. Theo?
Yes, good. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Excellent. And I wanted to respond on a couple of things that are happening in the chat regarding security transfers, domain name hijacks. And I would like to point out that now that Whois by most registrars is redacted, that one of the biggest attack factors used by criminals and hacking folks is now gone, because now there's no details that give a hacker the ID on which email address or which email account he has to hack. It's no longer visible. It makes it a lot harder for a criminal to hack such accounts, because it's no longer displayed. So what we see and feel, and we don't have any numbers right now as a registrars, but we do have the feeling that domain theft actually has gone down. But that is a little bit of a gut feeling here. We have to see, of course, at the end of like 12 months to get more details about it. But we do generally feel that now that attack factor is gone in the Whois, because as everybody knows on this working group or on the call, a lot of control panels, an email address is mostly used in the authentication of a user to gain access to his or her account. So having the email address no longer in the control in the Whois mentioned is like making it 50% more sure. I'm not sure I'm correct in the percentage, but it makes it a lot more difficult to hijack or steal a domain name. Thank you.
To the extent you can, if it's at all possible, take that 50% number and attempt to quantify it, even though the plus or minus on it might be very large. That would be terrific, but I wouldn't know how to go about that. But I'd be your statistics very your comment is very interesting, and to the extent we can attach numbers to it, it would be even more so. So, and I just want to point out to people that we capture everything in the chat. We cut and paste it into a page, go through it as part of our note taking. So, please, even if it's not acknowledged right this minute, that it occurs, much as I find the chat distracting, as you can tell. So, to close out this discussion on the transfer policy, there's a couple nits on language, right? Should the language to be offered be removed? Should the language best practices be improved? Are there any comments on that? All right, well, I'll make you talk about it later. Finally, I want to bring up the fact that is there a sense that this makes transfers harder or easier for registrants, and whether it's a bar in any way to transfer requests. Is there any sense of that in the experiences to date? Yeah.
Yes, thanks. So in our observation, and I'm going to speak as a registrar and not for the group, so personal capacity, I guess. What I see is support load went down for us. We get less complaints. The transfer process got easier. Our resellers are more happier. So that simplification in the process, I was kind of amazed how that worked out on an operational level. So far we are pretty positive. And of course, when compared to CC TLDs where transfer happen on an off code or transfer code only, we already had that experience. So for us, it's working out really, really great. Thanks.
Ha. I'm just reading the Arno's comment. All right. Is there anything else on this? So, but I learned a lot during that discussion, so that's good. I think we're perilously close to wrapping up. So if there's, I had reserved some time here to talk about either the pro forma triage report or the response to you're in at ICANN. If there's any more comments or people have put any more thought into that during the call, we can talk about that now, or, you know, please comment on those two documents in any way you see fit. We'll I hope to, like I said, I hope to get the response back to ICANN on the email today, and we will continue building the triage report as we get more and more surveys in. Caboose?
Yes, no, I respectfully request you to kindly spare a few minutes allowing us to prepare ourselves for another meeting, which will be at 1500 hours UTC, so some 10 minutes to get prepared for that, if possible. Thank you.
Well, there's nothing I'd rather do than be quiet. So, you know, I've also been asked to remind us that while we use the chat, and there's a lot, it's chunk full of good information on this one, there are people that are on the phone or listening only. So I really encourage you to, you know, picture us sitting around the table and just talking back and forth and bringing up points that are made in the chat. I also want to point out that this is the first meeting where those that are alternates or observers can see the chat and the slides, and we'll get a report back and see how that's working. And if we can make improvements, we will. So in the wrap-up, is it part four of the temp survey submissions are due by Sunday? I think. So not part three. And for the GAC, they're due Monday. And the next call will be Tuesday. So my vision is that we'll wrap up this triage discussion. We'll continue to build the triage report over the weekend to include what we've discussed so far, and hopefully have it done, you know, pretty darn close to the close of our call on Tuesday. As I said, the triage report is a requirement of the charter, and we want to fulfill that requirement and then get on to the substantive talk. For the next meeting, the ICANN support staff and the leadership team have had some spirited discussions on how to conduct the discussion going forward and bring, you know, to get us through this temp spec and amend it in a way that it can be published in an initial report before the meeting in Barcelona. So we'll unveil our thinking as soon as possible, hopefully in the Tuesday meetings. Hopefully I'm reading and trying to talk at the same time, which is beyond the scope of my abilities. You know, Tuesday, if there's time, we'll append that sort of discussion on to the end of the results of Survey 4. Alan, did you have a comment?
Just a quick question with regard to your talk about having people see the
Alan, this is Terry. We're unable to hear you. Can you speak a little closer to the mic?
Sorry. Can you hear me better now? Apologies.
Yeah. We certainly can. Thank you.
Okay. Just in relation to the discussion about alternates seeing the room, did we agree the last day that there was going to be a question posed whether or not certain alternates could attend the LA meeting, the face-to-face meeting in the place, or not in the place, as in could they attend the LA meeting? I just wanted to clarify that.
Yep, that's a topic of lively discussion that I'm working through. So, you know, given the way the charter's written, I just want to make sure that the GNSO Council leadership agrees with a position we're creating. So, you know, somewhat stunningly and amazingly complex issues, and we will be back to you in a couple days on that. But
Robert, thank you.
Unfortunately, I spent as much time on that as other stuff. Caitlin, do you want to review the action items and questions that we have for ICANN?
Yes, thank you, Kurt. Can you hear me?
Yes, and so can everybody else.
Okay, great. Thank you. excuse my voice, I'm a little bit ill, but the first action item is in response to Joran's letter, Kurt distributed a draft of like any EPDP team member feedback by close of business today so that he can send that out close of business Los Angeles time. And as Kurt already mentioned, the EPDP team member should respond to part four of the survey by Sunday, August 19th at 1900 UTC. And we do note that the GAC's response will be late there. For part four of the survey, I did want to note that there was one part of the temp spec added to part four, which is section eight. And so the Word version of that has been posted on the wiki. In terms of the questions for ICANN.org, I captured the following two questions. The first question is, the council envisioned via the charter to have direct participation of ICANN.org liaisons within the EPDP team. Is more needed with respect to the EPDP team's engagement with ICANN.org? And the second question is, if ICANN already reviewed its own work in certain areas or plans to do so, specifically with respect to GDPR compliance implementation, it would be helpful for our group to understand ICANN.org's thinking in relation to the EPDP team's work. And just as a note, these action items and questions have been pasted into the notes pod of the Adobe Room, so members can review those if they would like. Thanks, Kurt. Back over to you.
Yes, thank you very much, Caitlin. And in addition to that, they'll also appear in the meeting notes that go around. So if you have amendments, especially improvements to questions we have for ICANN, because we want to make them clear enough so that they can be answered forward, straightforward manner. So with that, unless there's any other comments, thanks very much. I want you to know that there's a scorecard that measures the quality and timeliness of responses to the survey, and it's a neck-and-neck race. So this fourth part of the survey is a chance for you to win the prize. But more seriously, thanks very much. You know, you're filling out the surveys. I'm asking you to comment on a letter back to ICANN. I'm asking you to think about this triage document that, you know, we're trying to make more meaningful than just a color-coded chart of agree, disagree, but actually create some building blocks for us. So thanks for taking your time to review that. And I'll be seeing you on the next call and probably in between. So if there's no more questions, thanks very much for your time today, everybody. I'll be talking to you soon.
Thank you, everyone. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines. Operator Mary, if you could please stop all recordings. Have a wonderful rest of your day.